Too bad we don't have like neckties to put them on the set of heads.
No, what we need are the samurai caps, like the
Yeah,
plastic samurai caps
that's what we
with
need.
the chommage
Yep.
sticking out there. Just put that on there. He's like, and then have a just start it like
Get
we're on
the
mobile.
glasses with the little like Uzumaki in it. Like,
Austin, how are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. How about you, Brian?
I am doing great, and
Good.
all you watching, welcome to the 4D podcast. Could you use a drink?
You know what? I think I could.
You get the cups ready. I'm gonna get this bottle of Dobroku. Now, Dobroku, this is actually made by my in-laws on their farm in Akita.
Ah. So what is it exactly? Because it looks like water to me, but we're in a sake bottle.
Yeah, well, anyway, what Dobroku is here is it's homemade sake. So it's basically the equivalent of moonshine. Just tell me when.
I'll go about the same as you went. All right.
We're just gonna put this right here. There we go. So what this is basically my in-laws made this at their house, and they make it every year around Christmas time.
Now, what is this? Is this from proper sake moonshine, or is this umeshu or
No,
something else?
this is straight rice from their field that they grew this year.
There you go.
I didn't get a chance to plant with them this year, but I did get a chance to plant with them last year.
Okay,
So,
kanpai.
kanpai. And kanpai is cheers in Japanese.
So if you've never had Japanese moonshine, which this is the first I've had homemade osake like this, this is actually really good. It's very sweet.
Yeah.
It's got a very sweet flavor to it. It doesn't have a bite like you would expect from normal osake. It has that very alcohol bite to it if you do karakuchi.
Like Katakuchi. I tend to think of it, it's kind of like, I don't want to call it a watered down whiskey, but it tastes a little bit, it's got that kind of that whiskey barley esque flavor to
Kind
it.
of, yeah.
And it's a little bit, what is it? It's got a little bit of bite usually.
A little bit, yeah. So, what is the most prevalent alcohol in Japan, would you say? Would that be umeshu? Would that be
I would
sake?
honestly say
Like,
beer.
nowadays, yeah, beer.
Nowadays would be beer, but if we're actually talking like stuff that comes in a bottle rather than stuff that comes in a can, I would say that you're straight up sake,
Yep.
like just your regular shop sake, like the stuff that you normally drink at room temperature.
Yeah. And for those of you who are looking at this bottle like, good God, you guys are alcoholics. No, this is normal size.
Yeah.
This is probably what, a 1 liter, 2 liter bottle?
Yeah, it's about 2 liters.
Yeah, 2 liter bottle. This is normal for what you find at the shops. Now there are the little 1 cup horrible osake things you can get that are the shots, and they're
That
just,
literally looks like they
oh.
put it in a mason jar.
And just put a lid on it, yeah.
Right. It look if you're from the States and you have been in either like Kentucky, Tennessee, West Virginia, basically in Appalachia.
There you go.
This looks like something that somebody sold off the back of their truck. Like moonshine that someone sold off the back of their truck.
Yep. And they're the cheapest that you can get, and they're essentially rubbing alcohol or gasoline.
Yeah, that's basically the flavor.
Yeah, it's not good.
Right. But no, this stuff here, I always well, we should get into like some of the bylaws in Japan about making alcohol.
Yeah, you know more about this than I do. You explained it to me
If
before.
I'm not mistaken, I think you can make up to like 10 liters, I think is the max you can make per year,
Okay.
like individually. And but obviously you can't sell it without a liquor license.
Yeah.
So my family, or I should say my wife's family, but they're my family now too. They make this Dobroku, which is like Japanese moonshine, every year around Christmas time. And this is when they make Dobroku, and usually around it'll keep for about 3 months. So we're getting close to its expiration date. Once it expires, it'll get cloudy. It'll have like this kind of white cloudiness inside of it, and it'll taste like vinegar.
Okay. So you were talking about liquor licenses. So you can only make about 5 of these bottles a year without a license.
Yeah.
Now in America, it's common to make your own homebrew, and when you get good at it, to become a microbrewery.
Yeah.
Are there microbreweries in Japan?
Yeah, they're called family businesses. No, but seriously, there's a lot of places, especially like specialty shops for sake, that like this family will be at this small village that's outside of a small town that has just a kind of a one building shop where they make sake, and then normally they don't service the community. They can, like if there's like a festival or something and they have sake for the festival, they normally service that. But usually it's exported out to different areas, different establishments in bigger cities to say this is specifically from Miyagi, from this family line that's been there for this many generations, that have been doing this for this many years, and that's its selling point.
Yeah, think of it like whiskey bars, kind of, where it's all whiskey, and you have the different whiskeys from the lineages or from the different countries. Same thing for sake bars,
Yeah.
the specialty shops.
Now, while neither one of us are like experts when it comes to sake, Japan is really, really specific on sake being from specific prefectures.
Yes.
So, and I'll be honest with you, having sake from different prefectures, the taste is completely different.
Yeah, if you taste some from, let's say, I think some are from maybe Fukushima, they have more of a very sweet taste to them. Some
Yep.
have more of a bite to them. Some have just taste like water, really.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, Fukushima won the best sake, like the best sake brewed in Japan.
Yep,
Like
they.
they won the award for that this year.
Yeah, I think that's. I
Or
think.
this last year.
Yeah, Fukushima, I think that's like the second or third time they've won that
Yeah.
award. So Fukushima, if you're, interested in sake, start with Fukushima,
Yeah,
apparently.
definitely.
So sake starts, there's people can make their own sake.
Yep.
Osake. So what other kinds of, this is moonshine, essentially.
Yeah.
So what other kind of moonshines do we have in Japan?
So, I mean, the term for the moonshine in Japan is Doburoku, but there are many different types. So, but there are many different types, many different variations. This one here is a filtered variation. So if you look at it now, I mean, it looks clear. It's got this yellowish tint. Other ones will have a clear color to them. And then one of my absolute personal favorites that is not created as often is an unfiltered one. And quite literally, it looks like skim milk, and it's got little pieces of rice inside it. So when you're drinking it, it looks like you're drinking milk. Like you get a sake mustache from drinking it.
And there is a version of that called amazake, but
Yeah.
it's not, sometimes the ones that you find in the store usually are not the alcoholic ones,
Right.
not the traditional ones. They're just good on cold days. Cold winter days, if they serve them hot.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
So when drinking sake, if you're drinking it hot, they got the little pitcher, the tiny pitcher that they pour it
Yes.
in. That's called the tokuri, and the
Tokuri.
little cups are called ochoko.
And that when you serve it like that, that is, what is it called? The when it's hot, it's oh shoot, I can't remember it. But it's served in multiple different ways: room temperature, hot, or cold.
Yeah.
It depends on the sake that you're
Right.
serving. In terms of the homemade wines, you can make any different kind. So there is normal sake like this, or there's my personal favorite, which is umeshu.
Yep.
Umeshu is just alcohol put into a vat with umeboshi plants for an extended period of time and some sugar, and it makes the same consistency alcohol, but it's more sweet and tart
Yep.
than this, although this is very sweet. Some other ones that are famous in Japan, I know in Okinawa there's a snake called the habu, and it's a poisonous snake, but the Japanese people make habu wine.
Yep.
Have you ever had it?
Haven't had it. I know that it costs an arm and a leg.
Oh, yeah.
It's like $100 a bottle.
Yeah. When you look at the bottles, there's literally a snake coiled up in it, and they
It's kind of like
ferment
that.
them.
It's kind of like that tequila that you can get
Yeah.
that's got the snake venom in it.
Yep.
That's in Mexico.
Yeah. Same concept, yeah. So there's the habu wine. There's also, what other wines do they have that they have animals in them? There's actually a fairly good amount. There are what, suzumebachi, which are the hornet
Yep.
that they use as well. Anything else that you can think of?
That they put in wine.
Yeah, they put in wine. I know there's one more that they use.
I
I
think
can't think of
I
it.
think it's another bug.
Is it another bug?
I think it's another bug.
Okay.
Because there's one with the hornets, and I think there's another one with it's a bug that they put in there as well.
Well, for all of them, I know that they started putting them in there for medicinal purposes.
Yep.
So they thought the habu would improve health, I believe,
Yep.
and the hornets would improve something else as well.
Yep.
So that's how they started with that. So that's some of the more famous homemade wines you'll have in Japan.
So usually the alcohol consistency inside a bottle of wine or bottle of Dobroku like this would be the same as drinking a glass of wine. So it's roughly the same. Sometimes she makes it, or I should say my wife's cousin makes it a little strong sometimes. But this batch here seems to be around average. I think one year they gave me the super potent stuff. Got drunk really quick.
There you go. So yeah, alcohol consistency in Japan is usually about, for Osake, about 12%, I'd
Yeah,
say.
it's right between 12 and 15.
Yeah, and then of course beers are about 5%, and other alcohols are in between there.
Don't they have a few beers out there now, like you can choose the level as well. Like there's a 3%, there's a 5%, and now there's like an 8, is
I've
it?
seen something like that, yeah.
And
I've
then
seen
like
3% and
I
5%.
can't remember exactly what they said in the commercial, but it's like, ah, it's got bite or something like that.
Yeah.
Like they like take the
Yeah, they definitely have expanded the variety that they
Yeah.
have in Japan.
Yep. So, let's talk about drinking culture
Okay.
and how your cup should never be empty.
Yes. So if your cup is ever halfway or under, like mine, your coworker, your senpai, your kohai will always fill it up for
Right.
you. You will have the never-ending cup.
Yep.
And there's something very interesting if you're a woman.
Yeah. If you're like usually what happens is they'll split you up at tables, and whoever has the highest social status as a woman will be required to fill everyone's cup at that table.
Yeah. So Japan is still kind of stuck in the past with the kind of sexist attitude sometimes.
It's more along the lines of that they have traditional, they still
The tradition.
hold to their traditional gender roles,
Right,
is
yeah,
what it is.
exactly. And so when you are in a drinking party for work or just out with friends, you will end up having the one person always filling up your cups.
Right. And that's not to say that only the women fill up the
No, of
cups.
course
I
not.
mean, that's not what we're trying to say at all. One of the main things is that you will see, especially if you go to a party that has like at least 30 plus people, someone will walk around with a bottle and they'll just start filling up people's
Yep.
cups. They'll go around and fill up everyone's cup at the table and have a little chat with them because it's the social thing to do.
Yes. Yeah, it's a thing that you need to do.
And whether it's male or female, it doesn't matter at that point. The only people that never have to fill up a cup are those that are at the highest level of social status.
Right.
So, we're both teachers. Principal, vice principal, never fill a cup.
And if they do, it is a very big honor. You say,
Right.
"Oh, thank you."
And they may fill your cup if you did something like For us English teachers, we have our a speech contest.
There you
If
go.
you won the speech contest and went to what is it, the
The
Kentaikai?
Kentaikai.
Or the
The prefectural, yeah.
prefectural tournament or prefectural meet and whatnot, and you went there, the principal may come and fill your cup. And it's a way of showing respect for the work you put into the what is it, the
Into the speech competition,
speech
yeah.
competition. And they do that for teachers that have won tournaments for sports as well.
Yeah, so there's a lot of the drinking culture in Japan is still drinking, but it's very structured,
Yes.
no matter where you are, and no matter what you're doing. So what are some of the more prevalent alcohols in Japan? Because I know we have beer, we have sake,
Whiskey.
umesu, and whiskey.
Whiskey.
Yes, whiskey has been on the rise in the past, I'd say 10 years.
10 years, and
It's
especially after they, what is it, about 3 or 4 years ago, they had that drama, that Japanese drama that came out where the husband was Japanese and the wife was from, what is it, Holland?
something like that,
It was
yeah.
something like, I think she was from Holland, if I'm not mistaken. And they started up what is it, a distillery, like in the Tokyo area. And it's about their life. What is it, trying to start this distillery and whatnot. But a lot of it turned into the wife's interactions with other Japanese people in the community, being not fluent in Japanese and whatnot. But it played into whiskey culture inside Japan.
And whiskey culture inside Japan has grown a lot with not only the dramas but with foreign influence as well.
Yes.
A lot of Australians who come over bring their whiskey, and there's been a lot of Australian bartenders and everything making specialty shops within Tokyo, and it's become very popular
Yes.
down there. And actually, I think it was 3 years ago where Japan won the award for the best whiskey.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Yamazaki
Yep.
whiskey. Yep.
Yep. It was their single malt, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe, yeah.
Right.
Yep. So Japan whiskey, osake, homebrew, and drinking culture. There's a lot of different things
Right.
that we talked about.
So, one of the other things that I was going to talk about with drinking in Japan is certain etiquettes. So, obviously, we talked about like your glass never you should never you should never let anybody you're in your group let their glass go empty. So if you see somebody that's getting close to the end of like they're close to the end of drinking something, you should immediately go and try and fill it if someone hasn't done it already. But another thing to keep in mind is that when you're drinking, it's never okay to drink from a bottle.
Yes.
So you should always be drinking from a cup. And there's two reasons for that in Japan. One of the reasons is that it allows people to complete that social obligation of filling your cup. But the other thing is that it's looked at as being barbaric and rude to actually drink from the bottle itself.
Yeah, that's why when you go to a lot of bars, they'll give you a cup so you can fill it up. And so when you just start drinking by drinking from it, a lot of people around you will just
No,
look at
yeah,
you.
they give you that. What?
Yeah.
What?
You start drinking the Bud or the Miller from the bottle. Yeah.
And one of the other reasons why they look at you really weird is because in Japan, a beer, if you're drinking beer specifically, beer to Japanese people needs to be three quarters beer and a quarter head.
Yes, and you were telling me about this, what the origin might be.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Japan has had a lot of influence from other countries or from around the world, whether it be from Germany or the United States or like Australia or any other like a Western country in that era, Western civilization.
Right, yeah. That Western influence.
Yeah, Western influence. So, a lot of times, like when you're drinking a stout, for example, a stout needs to have a little head on it. I mean, that actually adds to the flavor. It makes the stout taste better. For me personally, a dark ale that has a little bit of head on it is okay too. But for me, a lager that has any head at all is absolutely disgusting. But in Japan, the majority of beer that you drink here is pretty much all lagers. So when you order a beer, if whether you go to a bar or you go to an izakaya, which we should talk about those in a minute,
There you go.
and or you go to any social setting in which you're drinking beer, they're going to put a quarter of head in the beer, whether it's a stout or a lager. So, and it's just one of those things that for Japanese people, the how something looks, whether it's food or a drink, will also determine how well it tastes to a lot of Japanese people at the same time.
Yeah, one thing that I've heard a lot before coming to Japan, especially working in a sushi restaurant, is presentation is everything.
Yes.
Presentation adds to the taste. It adds to the whole atmosphere,
Yes.
which increases the taste.
And it's actually really funny because, like, people when they try to do direct translation and they're talking about like the term oishi. Oishi, if you look at the characters for it, it's basically looks and what is it, beauty and taste,
Right.
if I'm not mistaken, are the characters inside that. So they're specifically talking about how it looks and how it tastes at the same time. So most people, when doing direct translation, they try to use delicious, but delicious doesn't necessarily mean it has to look good.
Right.
So I mean, that's kind of like a point of of mistranslation, if you want to call it that.
Right.
So my main thing, the main thing with this is that the beer itself, if it looks good having that head on it, as most commercials do,
Always,
when you look
yeah.
at beer and whatnot, that is what people think is the standard for how beer should look. Whereas, like in the United States, if you even have like, I want to say half an inch of, or maybe even like a centimeter of head on it, it's like, dude, pour me another. That looks
Right,
disgusting.
yeah. Now, while we're talking about beer and head, this cup here is obviously not a sake cup.
No.
No, this would be more kind of a beer cup,
Yeah.
that size. What do the cups look like that you get sake or beer out of, usually at an izakaya or a drinking
I
party?
should have brought them up here. I really should. I should have gotten down to the kitchen and brought them up here.
Well,
Let's
since we
take a
have
quick
these,
break as I go
well,
downstairs and go pick them up.
there you go. So stay right there.
Yeah, hold on just a second.
Movie magic.
We'll just leave it run and then I'll come back and get it.
Okay.
Got the two different ones too.
There you go. Each and ah, my father-in-law loves this brand. That's his favorite.
This in here?
Yep. Did you go to the
Ichinokura?
yeah, he loves that. Did you go to the
This one's from our wedding.
is it from your wedding?
Yeah,
Oh wow, nice.
we had these ones at our wedding.
Oh wow, really?
Yep.
Jeez. You know
So
the
I was,
brewery's just
yeah.
yeah. That's why I thought you guys got
But I
that.
was gonna say, well, you have ones like these here, and usually they serve the hot one in this
Yep.
and the cold one in this.
Yeah, exactly. And they also do the little shot glass and overflow it into there.
Yep.
Yeah, I made my brother-in-law's sick with that.
All right.
Drink. Drink.
All right.
All right. So, this.
All right.
Sorry. Go ahead.
And we're back. And I brought the cups up here so we can take a look at them.
So this is a Western cup. This would be for beer. Well, sometimes for beer. This is normal. So we'll show you what a Japanese cup for sake looks like.
Right. And the main reason why I poured them into these cups here is, first of all, this is in the country and this is Doburoku. You
Yeah.
can drink it out of anything. Hell, you could drink it out of the bottle if you wanted
You
to.
could, yeah.
But when it comes to actual like other sakes and whatnot, usually you have two different types of cups that they use. So one of the cups they use is called ochoko, which looks like this here, and we got a picture of a fugu on there, or the pufferfish.
And this is used for hot wine, which is called atsukan.
Yes.
Atsu is hot and kan. So you'd pour it in there and drink from there with the small little
Tokuri.
heated tokuri.
Yep. And then there's one that they use for cold sake, and it's actually really cool because it's actually a wooden box that they put it in here.
And it's a wooden box with the dovetailing, the traditional Japanese dovetail.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a dovetail, but they have the overlapping wood that's traditional in a lot of Japanese architecture and building like this.
Right. So one of the main things that they do is they'll put a cup inside here like this and
And what they'll do is they'll take the osaka bottle and they'll dump it in until it overflows, and they'll dump it until this fills up. Then you drink this. You'll drink this part first, and then you'll drink this part next. Rinse and repeat.
yes, until you're pass out drunk.
Yeah. So this is something. This is actually very traditional style Japan.
Yeah, in all honesty, this ochoko here, we picked up at a, what is it, 100 yen shop.
There you go. Yeah,
So it
you
was
can get
like
them anywhere.
a dollar.
Yep.
And then this one is actually from my wife's and I and my wedding.
Oh,
So this is
there you
from our
go.
wedding.
Yep. And this is actually a now that we have it, just a maker that's based here in Miyagi, one of its main places here in Miyagi.
Right.
Yep. So that's just some of the traditional ways that you can enjoy osaka here in Japan.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah. So Japan has a wide culture of different alcohols and moonshines, doboroku,
Yep.
and ways of drinking.
Right. Actually, when I was doing a study abroad, I was actually down in near Fukuoka, and the guy there actually had a vineyard.
A vineyard, really?
Yeah, made his
Wow.
he made his own sake, he made his own wine,
Wow.
he made his own umeshu,
Ah,
and it was
there
amazing.
you go. Huh. Now, one thing I will mention while we're on the subject of alcohol is vending machines. When I came here for the first time, when I was 16 years old in Oita, there was beer on every corner.
Yeah.
You could go to any corner and there would be a vending machine where you could just buy beer as much as you wanted.
Right.
And of course, that led to some fun, interesting nights and horrible mornings. But that's beyond the point. Nowadays, you can't really find beer vending machines as common as they used to be.
Yeah.
So as much as you hear Japan has wonderful vending machines, they're super, and you hear, ah, oh, there are cigarettes and there's beer on every corner, it's not so true. Not as prevalent as it used to be.
Unless you live in
Well, and
the
that's
countryside.
it depends on where you are, because
Yeah.
if you're down in Tokyo or places like that, I imagine there are. I have seen some here or there that do still serve alcohol, but they have the special passes that you need to scan before you can get them.
Right.
Here in the country,
Yeah, you they
yeah.
yeah. The other thing is that basically any hotel that you stay in is going to have a vending machine that has beer in it.
Yeah, especially if they have a
Onsen,
onsen, yeah.
or the hot springs.
Yeah. There are two main drinks that you get at an onsen. If you stay at a more classy hotel, you have a selection of beer or milk for some reason.
Oh no, yeah, no. There's a big thing in Japan about going to hot springs and drinking milk.
Do you know what that's about? Because I have no idea. I don't understand it.
I don't understand it either, but I know that it's just a cultural thing that, like, Japanese people feel culturally that after getting out of the bath, if they're not going to drink alcohol, that they should drink milk.
Yeah, and as strange as it sounds, and you may think we're just lying, when you come, go to an onsen.
Yeah, no, I mean, this could also play into one of our previous videos where we talk about superstition when it comes to food, like food and drink in that sense
Yeah.
there, and how certain foods and certain items that Japanese people eat or ingest, I should say, they feel that they have certain properties that help them. So it could be one of those things like after you get out of the bath to help you cool down, that the milk itself is actually a has a cooling effect
Right. So that could
through
be.
that superstition.
Yeah. Who knows? If you know, leave it in the comments. I'd love to
Definitely.
hear. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Anything? Yeah. So beer or milk is something you'll have a lot after onsens.
Yep. Izakayas.
Yes. Izakaya. So what? An izakaya is a. How would you describe it?
Dive bar.
A dive bar. Wow. Okay. Okay. All right. So.
Well, hey, you know something? Living in the countryside, if you go to an izakaya, it is definitely going to be like you're walking into a dive bar. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going
All right, so an izakaya is essentially just a
to
restaurant or a dive bar you go to, and you pay for a certain amount of time, and you can get
Well,
food or drink or.
we should talk about how this is like a very culturally different way to drink as compared to like the United States. So like in the United States, if you were to go out with your friends to the bar and you were to go drinking, and let's just say you're supposed to be the DD, like you sitting there drinking like what is it, Pepsi or Coke,
There you
and everyone else is drinking alcohol. And when it comes to pay, you just pay for your Pepsi and Cokes, and they pay for all their alcohol. Well, that doesn't work the same way at an izakaya in Japan.
Yeah, okay.
So, like at an izakaya in Japan, what would happen is that you go into this location, and whether you drink or not, they will serve you a small food item, and then they will make you pay for the amount of time you spent there. So, if you are there for 2 hours, they will charge you a certain amount of money for that 2 hours that you spent there. You have a seat charge. So you pay the seat charge on top of how much you drink. If you drink a lot, usually they lower the seat charge, especially if you are a local or if you live close by and are going to be visiting regularly.
Yeah.
So I mean that's a major difference. So the main thing you need to understand is that the majority of places that you can go out and drink in Japan are izakayas. So you're going to pay that seat charge on top of whatever you drink.
And just as a kind of side note to that, there are izakayas, there are also snack bars and hostess and host bars as well, each with their own little themes and sorry, motorcycles. Each with their own little themes and their menus and their prices as well.
Right. And I mean, there's also other bars that are less than reputable that sometimes you walk into them and you're like, oh, it's one of those places. Next bar.
Runaway. Yep.
So, I mean, they have their pink bars.
Yeah. Do you want to explain pink?
Well, basically, what a pink bar is you walk in and they have like a full bar display. But the whole purpose of the pink bar is not for drinking, but for
Adult time?
Adult time.
There you
Well,
go.
it's
Yeah.
basic it's basically legalized prostitution.
Yeah. In Japan, so yeah, we should probably explain that. In Japan, pink is the color of naughtiness, I
Yeah.
guess. Yeah. So you have in the video stores, you have your pink section sometimes, you have your pink izakayas, your pink stores. So.
Right. Well, I mean, and we should elaborate on that as like as it deals for areas in which adults are present, that is what the pink term stands for. But obviously, like if you're talking about toys and whatnot for children, pink is obviously not,
yeah,
meaning it, it doesn't mean that.
Of course, yeah.
So, like a pink bar is something that you would go to for, in essence, legalized prostitution. Another thing is dohan.
Now, what is a dohan?
Well, dohan is usually, it's usually a service a bar offers. And what happens is that guys will come in and there will be a girl at the bar that will chat you up and talk with you. And it's socially understood that you will buy gifts and stuff for them. And then usually at a certain point, you may start dating them.
Mm.
Depending on how much you've spent and how much of a regular you've become.
Right. And that differs from hostess and host bars because there's no social
obligation
that you will start
right, and maid, what maid cafes as well.
Exactly, yeah.
And maid cafes also serve alcohol.
Yeah.
Maid cafes, they are paid to pretend to be maids to make you feel like you're superior and whatnot. And then there's the hostess cafes, which is the, or host cafes.
Yeah, which...
which is the opposite, in which women can come and there will be the ikemen.
Yeah, the handsome...
handsome men that will come and... pretend to be these loving gentlemen while you drink
while you drink and have fun. And there's
and watch.
And there's a ton of different izakaya and styles as well. Not just hostess bars and host bars, but you know, there's like the different cafes as well, that the different cafes they're called, but there's the penguin bar, there's the owl bars, there's all
robot.
These different ones.
Robot cafe?
Yeah, the robot cafe in Shibuya?
And then there's the one in Akihabara, the Gundam cafe.
There you go, yeah. So there's all these different ones. They have their, all their different themes, but they're all pretty much the same thing. They're the dive bars.
Yes. Basically, you come in, you no matter how much you drink... usually, especially at like well-known places like the Gundam Cafe or the Robot Cafe, you're going to pay a seat charge for a certain amount. If you live out in the boondocks like we do, and you this is a place that you went like two or three times a week, they may lower your seat charge depending on how much alcohol you drink.
And one thing that a lot of these places do have started doing, I've noticed, I don't go out very much, but when I do... they have bottle service as well. They have my bottle nowadays.
Yep.
Yep. Something that's become more and more common.
Yep.
Or they'll put a little, either your name on the label or they'll have it just set on the wall waiting for you.
Yep.
For the locals and the people who come the most
patrons.
Often. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. When the patrons come, they have all that stuff set out. And usually what happens is like, unless they're packed, they will even reserve seats for patrons that come basically the same time every day.
Yeah.
So, like, if you finish work at 6 o'clock every day and you're at the izakaya at 6:30 and someone else walks into that izakaya and there's an open table and they're like, no, that's for someone else.
Yeah. And that goes into a little bit, I don't want to say the senpai system, but it's more the socially, you're socially...
well, you know, I mean, and if you also think it from a business aspect,
exactly,
why would you give a seat to somebody who may not come back when you have somebody that's going to come back at a regular time?
Right.
And I'm not going to get into business or politics or anything, but I mean, that's kind of the thought process that goes through the mind there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and it's also... you know, the person comes all the time. Japanese people are very loyal to the brands and to the shops that they shop at. So,
well, I mean, the other thing is that you build camaraderie. I mean, as we have said before in many other of our episodes, is that usually Japanese people are pretty private. But when it comes to establishments like this, usually you develop a relationship with the people that work there. You come to know them very well. I mean, you develop a... more of a friendship.
Almost. I would say it becomes a friendship or maybe chief counselor.
Acquaintance with them, and it works in your benefit. So, I mean, it's more reason for people to frequent certain places.
Yep.
I mean, we all have like our own bars and whatnot that we would frequent and whatnot, and we knew the people that worked there, and they knew us, they knew our names and whatnot, and it felt more, what is it, at home to be there. It's
Yeah.
the same thing with izakayas. But the other thing to keep in mind is izakayas are a dime a dozen,
Yeah.
especially if you're walking
Yeah,
through.
that's
Yeah,
true.
no, seriously,
Yeah.
if you're walking. Even in an extremely small town of less than 10,000 people, there's going to be at least 6 to 10 izakayas inside there.
Easily, yeah,
Easily.
easily. Yeah.
And even then, if you walk into them, they're definitely going to remember your name.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially, yeah, if you're a foreigner,
Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
that's
But no, I
100%.
mean, I've seen walked into places where they've had patrons that this guy, yeah, he's like, this guy's been coming here for 2 years. And like when this guy's been coming here for 5 years, like this,
Yeah,
and they know them by name.
yeah. Yep. Yeah, so, yeah, Japanese drinking culture, there's a lot to it.
Yeah, so just keep in mind that if you come to Japan and you decide to go to one of these izakayas, or I don't want to call them a dive bar because not all of them are a dive bar. Some of them are a dive bar, but not all of them. You're going to have to pay for a seat charge, and that's just part of the culture.
Yep, that's just part and parcel of the package.
Definitely.
There you go. All right. Anything else we can think of? Looks like your cup's getting pretty low. Should I fill it up for you?
Yours is lower than mine.
Right, everyone, I think that's all we have for today.
All right, we'll talk to you later. Take care.
All right, see you.
Bye-bye.